You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to a special Times Higher Education podcast marking the publication of the 150 under 50 rankings for 2016 and also the Young Universities Summit being held by Times Higher Education at Pompeu Fabra University in Barcelona. I'm Chris Havergal, I'm joined by rankings reporter Ellie Bothwell and student content editor Carly Minsky. In a moment I'll take you through the top performers in this year's ranking, but first I wanted to come to you, Ellie, and ask, why do we have 150 under 50 ranking?
Yeah, well, we decided to have this this ranking for to celebrate young universities, and it's really just to showcase sort of rising university stars. The overall World University Rankings is dominated by institutions that have centuries of funding and alumni, and they've had decades and to build up their reputation. And so, really, this is just a chance to kind of spotlight some of those institutions that maybe don't have those entrenched advantages, but are actually performing really strongly. I mean, there's a sense that actually, you know, it's not fair to necessarily, you know, judge them against these other prestigious institutions that have been around a long time. The average age of universities in the World Universities Rankings is about 200. Some of the ones at the top of the 150 under 50 ranking, you know, only 25 years old. Mm-hmm. So it also highlights those countries that are really investing in higher education at the moment.
Great. And so just take me through also, before we get to the results, the methodology. Is it the same sort of methodology as we use as the World University Rankings, or do we tweak it to take account of their circumstances?
Yeah, so it's based on the methodology of the World University Rankings, but it is slightly different, as you say. Basically, reputation counts for slightly less in this ranking, because, you know, these institutions haven't had as much time to build that up. So we allow for their youth. But apart from that, it is based on the same sort of 13 performance indicators, and it's across, you know, all of the core pillars of a university. It's teaching, it's research, international outlook and knowledge transfer.
That's great. Well, let me take you through the top 10 for the 2016 ranking. In first place, retaining top spot, is Switzerland's École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne. In second place, up three places, is Nanyang Technological University of Singapore. In third place is Hong Kong University of Science and Technology. Fourth is Maastricht University from the Netherlands. And fifth is from South Korea, Pohang University of Science and Technology. In sixth place, South Korea again, we've got the Korea Advanced Institute of Science and Technology. And the rest of the top 10 is four European institutions. At number seven, the University of Konstanz from Germany. Another German institution in eighth, Karlsruhe Institute of Technology. Ninth, the top French entry is Pierre and Marie Curie University. And in tenth, Italian entry, the Scuola Superiore Sant'Anna. That's the top 10, Ellie, but you've been looking at the results in much more detail. I mean, what do they actually tell us about which countries, which universities are performing really well at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a mix, though, as you can see just alone from the top 10, quite a mix of countries. I mean, this ranking generally, Asia, the East Asia and the kind of Asia Pacific region does really well in this ranking compared to the World University Rankings. Obviously, Europe, a lot of European countries do very well in the World Rankings, but Asia does really well. So there are five in the top, I think maybe four, sorry, in the top 10 from East Asia. So that's one of the main trends. I mean, Australia is usually one of the most represented countries, and it is again this year. It's second most represented after the UK. It's worth bearing in mind that this year we ranked 50 more universities. So last year we just ranked 100, this year it's 150. So there are more institutions there because of that, and we have to be careful about sort of making comparisons year on year.
Yep, fair point, yeah.
And also because, you know, it's and naturally it's quite a dynamic list, because we say you have to be 50 years or younger. And so every year, you know, some universities fall out of the table.
Yeah, you've lost Warwick this year, for example, which again would have been a top good performer, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a bit of a kind of maybe warning for the UK, this ranking, because obviously the UK's younger institutions are generally the sort of ones from the 60s. There are some kind of post 92 institutions, but generally those aren't performing as well. So there is a sense that maybe in future years the UK, you know, isn't going to remain the most represented country, and maybe, you know, countries like Hong Kong and Singapore and South Korea are actually doing more to nurture the younger institutions and they're focusing kind of building brand new universities.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that, just looking at the results now, that's quite interesting, if you look at sort of some of the Asian systems, so South Korea, Hong Kong, they've done really well at getting some young universities were right to the top of the 150 under 50 very quickly. But when you look at sort of the numbers from different systems in the 150 as a whole, there's many more from European countries in the sheer number of institutions. Does that show that there's a sort of a different approach to university development between Europe and Asia? Have sort of they sort of in Asia really targeted a handful of institutions to really get behind?
Yeah, I think so. And I think also a lot of the ones in Asia are quite focused on science and technology subjects. They've got a really, really clear mission. It's sort of, you know, the governments have very much got behind and decided to kind of launch these institutions and invest loads of money in them. I think you have to be a little bit careful as well. Some of the ones in Europe are actually, even though they are sort of under 50 years old in their current guise, they've actually have maybe much longer histories behind them because they've resulted from demergers or mergers. So some of them do, you know, benefit from some of the history, even though they're in their current form, they are quite young. Whereas I think in Asia, a lot of them are just brand new universities that have managed to kind of rise up very, very quickly.
Sure. I mean, so looking at these results here, I mean, if I was setting up a new university now, are you able to sort of glean from the stories of these universities what sort of secrets of success might be to sort of really make that progress to become a world-class institution in a short period of time?
Yeah, well, I think what from speaking to some of the presidents of the universities, one of the things is just having very, very flexible sort of management structure. Obviously, maybe that is actually something that's maybe a bit easier for younger institutions. They're sort of not burdened by history. They don't necessarily have these governance that they have to, you know, that has to kind of remain the same. Actually, the president of the University of Constance spoke about their performance funding system. So the academics at the institution don't get any kind of basic funding, from the senior management team. They every year they have to kind of prove that the research they're doing is modern and interesting, and they write a report, and then they get funding based on that. So I think there are some really interesting approaches from the young universities, and their flexibility and their sort of clear vision is maybe what drives their success.
Well, just one final question for you then, Ellie. I mean, looking at sort of the stories that you've heard about these institutions, have you got any sense of whether these institutions are likely to be really challenging the established order soon and getting much closer to the top of the world university rankings?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, some of them are already doing pretty well in the overall world university rankings. I think we can see that East Asia is generally rising in our world university rankings as well. Like Singapore had a really good year in October's ranking. So I think it will take a lot of time for, you know, I think Oxford's and the Harvard's of the world are probably, you know, going to stay at the kind of top of the list for probably many more years to come. But I think a lot of these young universities are definitely challenging the dominance, particularly in the sort of US and UK.
Great. Watch this space then. I mean, Carly, turning to you now, I mean, why should students be interested in this league table? What's in it for them?
Well, I think the first thing is just really simple. There are universities that they wouldn't have heard of, and this is a way for them to benchmark them against other universities so they can be selective in what they want. So, you know, we've already noted that even though the UK is very well represented in the overall ranking, the UK doesn't appear in the top 10 or even the top 15. And students all around the world are now considering options that aren't the UK and the US. And the universities they've heard of might be in the UK and the US, but, you know, due to visas, due to funding, they really are looking for other options. And continental Europe and even Asia, Asia is becoming a regional hub for for students from the region. So this ranking really does show that there are other options that are, could be really good for them, particularly if they're interested in kind of industry connections and innovative teaching.
Great. I mean, do you think there's some things that could actually make these young universities almost more attractive for certain types of students, rather than that sort of traditional established order, you know, the ones that they've already heard of?
Yeah, I think the consistent trend in these universities when it comes to the student experience is that they have this freedom and flexibility, as Ellie said, to really depart from the other universities in that area. So it's really different at each university. There are some universities that are really focused on kind of digital learning, and there's other universities that POSTECH in South Korea, for instance, stands out for being a really research-intensive university, and that was a departure from other universities in South Korea. And students that I spoke to there said that that was a real attraction for them, that they could train to be researchers. So whatever the student's looking for, if they're wondering what their options are and they want to kind of broaden their horizons, I think looking at these new universities could give them some more options.
Great. And if I understand rightly, you've put together a couple of resources that could help students navigate their way through this list of universities.
Yeah, exactly. So there is an Ask Online that sources those kind of testimonials from students themselves. And then obviously you can look at the university profiles, and there are blogs from students. So I think it is really individualistic. It just depends what the student's looking for, and that's why it's so important to go and read about the student experience.
Brilliant. Well, all of these issues are being discussed at the Times Higher Education Young University Summit. That's been held this week at Pompeu Fabra University in Barcelona, where leaders of young universities from around the world gathering to discuss issues such as research, knowledge exchange and fundraising. You can follow that debate on Twitter and at the Times Higher Education website, www.timeshighereducation.com. But to find out more about the rankings themselves, there's a special printed supplement with the current edition of Times Higher Education magazine, and you can also find out the full results at thewur.com. That's WUR standing for World University Rankings, of course. Beyond that, we'd love to hear your feedback and your ideas about these rankings, what you make of them. One way of doing that is through social media. We're at THE World Uni Rank. You can also find us on Facebook as well. But that's all for this special Times Higher Education podcast.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.